Sweden, up in Scandinavia. You can follow us on a regular basis at redicecreations.com. Much more for you on the website. Peter Halldórsson is an Icelandic artist and author of The Measure of the Cosmos. His book explains how men in antiquity marked an image of creation in the terrain of new settlements. The book is based on Einar Pálsson's hypotheses concerning the use of numerology and symbolism by ancient cultural communities to calculate the placement of their sacred images of creation. The principal reference points were the motions of the heavenly bodies, the cardinal directions, and the proportions of the human body. Man's image of creation was a projection on the terrain of the zodiac, anchored to prominent landmarks on the ground and the sun's annual path around the zodiac. Peter explains how the ancient approach is akin to a yardstick, which applies not only to the ancient image of creation discovered in Iceland, but was also used in ancient times in all parts of the globe. Welcome to Red Ice Radio, Peter Halldórsson. It's really good to have you with us. This is going to be an interesting program, I think. This is a new subject, if you will, a new name as well, one that I haven't heard about until very recently. But first of all, welcome to the radio program, Peter. How are you and how is things in Iceland today?
Thank you, Henrik. Things are good. Getting better.
Getting better. A lot of upheaval we hear from over this end, anyway. How are things politically? I mean, I know we're not going to talk primarily about this, but it would just be interesting to hear from you a little bit about that.
It's been a tough parliament, time for parliament, and it's been a tough political time. A lot of upheavals and, a nation that went under, got nearly bankrupt. Is, you know, there are a few fires here and there.
Yeah.
But it's going well. It's going good.
Have you gotten back onto your feet at this stage?
Yes, we are getting fast back on our feet. Yeah. I think it's safe to say.
What
many will not. It's a political issue, really.
It is. I know. It's we hear rumors from here, Peter, and we're going to invite another Icelandic lady later. I think she still is a member of the parliament, Birgitta Jonsdottir, in case you know her. Yeah.
Yeah. Know her name. Yeah.
Okay. Really good. So have you guys been able to kick out the bankers that we hear, debt forgiveness? A lot of these rumors are circling around. Is there any truth to these rumors?
That is a work in process, I think.
Okay. All right. We'll leave it at that for now. We're obviously going to go into a much more esoteric subject here today, if you will, and discuss some of the work that you've been doing. And also want to say thanks to Marcus out there, most likely think is going to be listening in, who sent me a copy of your book a while back and alerted me to your work. So thanks for that, Marcus.
Thank you, Marcus. Yeah.
And so let's not assume that anybody knows anything of this stuff that we're going to talk about today. The Measure of the Cosmos is the title of your book, Peter. And is there an easy way for you to tell us a little bit about the concept, the background, if you will, so our listeners can kind of get an idea of what we're going to talk about here today?
it's a method of colonizing virgin land for a man at, you know, it's a cult that declined 2,000 years ago when Christianity took over. But when a new land is colonized, man must get his bearings when he gets there. He must find water, clean water. He must find pastures. He must, do all those things that need, to hack out his life there. But when that is done, he must probably orient himself there, find the main directions, and he must make an almanac to know the seasons, when they come and go. And when he reconnoitered new land, he was in fact measuring it. And slowly but surely, some kind of a cosmic image or an image of creation, for want of better words, I use those words for what seems to be a system. Ancient men marked on land as they colonized it.
Absolutely, and it's a measure. It's an image, obviously, that you have prominently featured in the book, of a few different examples of where this can be found. We're going to get more into detail about this, and obviously we're going to have some images linked up so our listeners can look at those on our webpage as we talk about this and follow along, so they can get a little better idea. But why don't we talk about the origins of this, how this concept first came to you, and maybe your relationship, I guess, if you will, to Einar as well, Einar Pálsson.
Yeah. He studied these remarkable ideas through symbolism and allegory of Icelandic sagas like Njáls saga and more stories. He suggested that in Iceland, on the southern flatlands of Iceland, was a cosmic image of this kind. He called it a wheel of time. And he said that between Bergþórshvoll, which is a prominent spot in the saga, Njáls saga, and Stöng, which is another farmstead that features in the saga, there is a line measured 216,000 feet, around 66 kilometers. And it had a center, and it pointed from the winter solstice in the southwest to summer solstice in the northeast, the spot where the sun rose on summer solstice and where it sank on winter solstice. And he suggested that this was a kind of an area that that was important in those times.
Is there anything you can mention about Njáls saga for those who haven't heard it? Is there an easy way to conceptualize this for us?
Njáls saga is probably an it's probably based on similar myths from European countries, or sectors of it at least. And it seems to be an allegorical tale of how Christianity took over from pagan habits. And there's a gallery of people in it, and they are they seem to have their symbols and roles, so to speak. And places in it seem to be important. It's the way for chiefs to sort of maybe keep old knowledge, in safe from authorities, if you get my drift.
Right.
You
know,
so they wrote allegorically about important stuff, important things.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there a way we can maybe then also tie this. I want to try to get to this idea of when and maybe also even how Christianity came along, you know, later, and also how does then this image that we're going to discuss more about, how it comes to us in different ways, this image of creation, if we can call it that, as you said. But the Icelandic creation saga or the discovery, tell us a little bit about that and how that, if that has anything to do with this image we're going to talk about.
There are, this is all based on very vague information. We have to piece together a puzzle that's diverse and it seems that this image of creation was a flat area in the southwest. Firstly, you had to find a center when you imagine this image of creation. Many things happen probably simultaneously. The center gets a prominent place from which you base your almanac or cosmic circle. From the center, which is called Steinkross in Iceland, the sun will set during the darkest day behind Bergþórshvoll, where Njáll, the most prominent figure of Njáll's saga, lived. And the sun will set during summer solstice behind a place which later became the bishopry of Iceland, the seat of the bishop. And it would rise during summer solstice behind a place called Stöng, which has a prominent sort of symbolic feature as a place of procreation or sexual habits. And then it would rise during winter solstice in the southeast behind a place called Gólasteinn. All of these four places are measured 108,000 feet from the center. And they point to the beginning of summer, the beginning of winter, and from there you can find north, east, south, west.
So this is also a seasonal almanac that we also have seen in so many other places around Europe. Most of them seems to have this particular alignment, if you will, then of the solstices. Yeah. And of the rise and setting of the sun at these equinox and cross equinox points, basically. So very interesting. And so how did Einar first see this, or came to this concept? Was this by him looking at something in the Icelandic geography and combined with some of the places that had been built according to this, or do you know how he came to this or discovered this?
It seems he made he just got a premonition. I think it's a huge discovery. We have studied our sagas quite extensively up here in the high school, in the university, and the Árnastofnun, but we have never looked at it from this point of view as if the landscape has some important role in it, the landscape itself, but places which told you when seasons start and stop. This is all a very, very visual, like you say. It's a very visual research. The search is based on visual, research.
Looking at maps, looking at surveying, etc. Yeah.
Yeah. looking at mountains, rocks, features in the landscape that correlates to this, the, where the sun will rise or set, you know. All this is easily read from ancient texts where we see that the land itself was a living entity, really. The area itself.
Yeah.
What else? Because they lived by the land and on the land, and they looked at the stars, and they saw the stars all the time. Now we stopped seeing stars, you know, 50, 60 years ago.
Right, yeah.
So they lived by all these features of nature, and they aligned their whole being to it, you know.
Yeah, and their whole civilization, if we can call it that, what they built as well. Now, now, how important is it with, we understand that there's natural features that has to be, if we can call it that, included in this image, that the Wheel of Time.
Yeah.
But is there also something within this that have to be built? If we look at the first one in your book about this image of creation, we can see that it's certain human built structures that's part of this as well, right?
Yeah. Do you have my hardcover book or the green book?
I have the hardcover book.
Ah, the green book has a lot better maps. The green book is available on Amazon.
Now, is there any way for you to? I know this might be difficult then, since we're talking about images here, but is there a way for you that you can describe the pattern of it, how the whole image kind of looks if you look at it from above, for example?
You're referring to the map I did in the first map I did in my hardcover book.
Yes, and obviously the main pattern, if you will, the main image, yes.
When you come to a land like this, you pace it for maybe generations, and you mark this on the land. You see the center, the stained cross center.
Yep.
And from there, the whole, you know, the whole system appears, really. In your land, my preliminary research refers to this place as Uppsala, or mm-hmm. the Viking cemetery just north of Uppsala.
Mm-hmm.
But this nothing guides this, but except how the sun sets and rises during solstices. This is just an almanac, really. The strangest thing about it, though, is why this size, why this pattern, why this 216,000 feet pattern.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That is why. That is my sort of main reason for interest in this matter, and. To make a long story short, this pattern, this 216,000 feet pattern, has inbuilt in it a day. One day. Meaning, if you go to a gym and go to a sort of running machine.
Treadmill, yeah.
Treadmill, yeah. And you pace it from... Well, for for 12 hours, and you pace it 5 feet per second without stopping from 12 o'clock until 12 o'clock. You pace 216,000 feet.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What this entails is a sort of mnemonic, if you get my drift, mnemonic pattern. Which we seem to have inbuilt in our, if we take a man as a machine. like a car will need fueling in so and so many miles.
Right. Yeah. Understand.
If I'm not saying that this is what they did, you know, walking from Berkosport for 12 hours nonstop to Stöng, because the land is, you know, it's got fissures in it and mountains and hills and whatever.
Right, it would actually be more than maybe 260. What you're talking about is the bird's eye view, if you survey, right?
Ah, absolutely. That's it. The bird's eye view. This is very similar as to what we find when we look at the pattern and the behavior of migrating birds.
Yeah,
they come and go within 3 day period sometimes, same time year after year after year to the same nesting grounds. From maybe 2,000 kilometers away, and nobody can. I sometimes say I can explain how this 216,000 foot measure is made over a virgin land, when you can explain to me why, you know, migrating birds come at the same time every year.
Right, right.
This is a similar enigma, if you will. But it is there. And we see in England the same pattern lying underneath edifices like Stonehenge, Glastonbury, Avebury. And we see it in my new book. It has got 13 cosmic images, and they are all alike. And they all seem to be based on this pattern.
And the pattern is not a ratio. This is actually always the 216,000 feet that you talk about. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's it. Hmm. Except in Egypt and Denmark and Uppsala. Denmark and Uppsala have exactly 200% bigger system. You don't count 100. You don't count to the center 108,000 feet. You count 216,000 feet.
Huh? Do you know why the difference?
Maybe because of the huge flatness of the area. Maybe.
Tell us a little bit about the importance of. Well, we're going to get into this idea here about how they built. You know, when they came to a new area, this is about claiming also new land. But the river delta, the importance of this being tied to a river. What is the significance of that?
That would be the best soil, the best breeding grounds for animals. It would be the safest place to be. If you make a mount, you can see far off from it, and you have a clean water.
That's right. Very important.
Yeah, most important, I think. Good grass, clean water. Huge visibility.
So let's just describe this briefly here, though. We have a circle, as you say, and then we have primarily two lines going through that circle, meeting in the center. And as you said, these circles are 108,000 feet.
Yeah, radius.
In the radius.
Yeah.
And then we have something interesting then happening also in the middle of that, because one of the points or all the four points of this mark, as you said, the sun at these equinox points. But what is happening in the middle with this with the cube or whatever we want to call that?
That is another enigma. It seems that when the huge image has been paced, you need to make a a pact with us or something, you know, for want of better word, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to phrase it, but you pace, I propose that from the center, you pace straight south, 36,500 feet, from the center to a place on the horizon, twice 18,250 feet. It's 3 minutes of Earth circumference.
Mm-hmm.
Twice. So you make a sanctified area from the center down south, which is at this size, 36,500 feet in diameter. From the second center, if you will, the southernmost center from the center. Oh, this is, I know this sounds horrible.
That's all right. Go ahead. We have images to look at as well, as you know. So
I can't explain it except that having a, you know, this is the visual aspect of it.
You need
to have it visually.
Yeah.
But from the center, you measure an area which is 6 minutes of Earth circumference each side, or it's both a square and a circle. The circle has this diameter. So the square has these sides, 36,500 feet. And this is equal to twice, that is 6 minutes of Earth circumference.
Mm-hmm.
Why this? You know, I've been, I'm breaking my, you know, brain around this for so long.
Yeah.
But it seems to be this way because Helgafell in Iceland, if you see my drawing,
yeah,
Helgafell, the whole, you know, holy mountain, and Mount Þríhyrningur to the east and Hof to the west, these seem to be very, you know, sophisticatedly measured and marked. And not just here in Iceland, but in every cosmic image I find, with prominent ideas and features on each locale.
And these, again, then can be natural, or they can be something built by man, correct?
Natural and built by man, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Like Þríhyrningur, the northernmost point of Þríhyrningur is the measuring starting point from in Iceland. Helgafell, a special, it's on my website. I have found some strange markings up there.
Uh-huh.
At Helgafell. And in Icelandic myth, you will find that Helgafell opens up north, and when a person dies, she will go into Helgafell, where it will open up north, and then she will perish. And I propose, this is a sort of a ritual, very similar as in our solar system, really, that when you die, you go into the center, and you are buried at the center. But the ritual of dying from Helgafell north to Steinkross is a very intriguing one, because there are many ideas that support a kind of death ritual that went by these rules, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this, if you will, circle of the center, which is 36,500 feet in diameter, is a symbolic earth in the settlement. It's a symbolic earth. If I can refer to my drawing on page 24. Do you have it?
Yeah.
You see A, B, C, D, A in a drawing.
Yeah.
The B is the center of this circle.
That's right.
Which I call Earth, the symbol of Earth. It is the same as if you, it's got the same proportional size as if you stand at a flat area, like in at the beach, and you look out to sea.
Mm-hmm.
You can see this far from you. If you're standing, a 6 foot tall man, standing on the beach, looking out, he can see 3 miles. That's where his line of sight touches the ground, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, so this is basically, if you were looking, that's where the curvature of the Earth from your perspective would begin, so you wouldn't see things behind that.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, that is, of course, this is a big ship. You could see it, you know, from further off.
But, you see the mast first, for instance, yeah, and then, later you see the hull. Yeah, I got it.
This is based on two things. The sea and rescue operation here in Iceland and everywhere on Earth has a manual for saving people from the sea.
Mm-hmm.
They will split the search area into squares of this size.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because this is the size a man can see from himself if he, for instance, is standing upright in a boat.
Right.
So they divide the search area into 6 minute squares, and when it's a very intriguing idea that when settlers come to Iceland, they bring with them, or they went to Norway to get a law book called Grágás. And Grágás specifically says how to measure when Parliament should be made, or at what time Parliament should commence from.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And they explicitly say if you stand on a beach and you reach up with your hand to the, and you have a spear, and you reach up to the top of it, and the horizon is clean, and you can see the sun, you measure the shadow from this kind of proportion.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to say is when people colonized new land, they only had themselves to use as a measuring unit and the nature around them.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That makes absolute sense. You come to a new area, you don't know, excuse the term, where the heck you are, perhaps. You want to try to survey the area to try to understand what kind of, what you have to work with, basically. But
right.
What you're trying to explain here is that there is a certain rule, if you will, the law here that you mentioned, that this is the rules of how you should perform the measurement.
Right.
Yeah.
You use a body. And you use... Yeah, that we use a body.
Yeah.
This seems to be the basic ingredients of how a cosmic image like I'm proposing was measured. Or what in fact, Einar Pálsson found first. And he said to me, you go ahead and find those cosmic images or wheels of time in the land surrounding us, because... They were not found out up here. They must have been in the luggage of the settlers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that's probably that's the reason for the book.
So this is rules that comes from elsewhere first. Is there any? I mean, this has to do with, we have to go back into origins of civilization and when man first began with doing these things. But what you're proposing, I guess, as well, is that this is built on a system that was way in place before settlers came to Iceland. Is that
right?
Correct?
That's the basis for London, for Paris, Rome, Athens, the Holy Land, Uppsala, Jelling in Denmark. It seems to be the basis for how those lands were established.
And you have a huge, very interesting portion about France in the book too. Paris specifically, I want to talk about that too later. But is there any guesswork at this point of where the system of measurement first came from, Peter?
It seems to have come from the Indian area through Sumer, Babylon, Egypt, the Holy Land, and Turkey, Greece, and Europe. It seems to be there's. I want to emphasize also that there's nothing foreign about this. This is what we do when we have to, and we don't have any other references. This is how man colonizes a virgin land. It must have been very easy to settle in when you had to pace the land, back and forth for maybe generations, maybe. Yeah. But when you've done that, this sort of gradually sinks in. It was probably not phrased like I'm doing now, but it's just a way to colonize a new land,
Yeah.
And if you, yeah.
I just wanted to say there then as well that this is the reason why we today have the major cities in the areas we do. This is, we're still in the residue, if you will, of this measurement system that you're proposing. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's what I think, yeah. Because this is the prime land. This is the best land. The Thames Delta, the where Paris is, where Seine sort of seems to not know where to go because the land is so flat. It sort of snakes around, It's a lot of clean water. And the water area around and south of Uppsala, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
There's nothing foreign about this because the land and all that has to go together.
It certainly does, and so this is also the reason then why they decided to settle in certain areas and not in others, I guess, because things had to make sense within the environment of what they had there to begin with.
Right. That's right.
Hmm.
Everything had to fall in place. The path of the sun, the path of the stars, the goodness of the land, clean water, and everything had to fit like hand in glove.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but 2,000 years ago, all that was attached to this kind of thinking was sort of removed, burned, or destroyed, or and it all was engulfed into one God because that's where we were then. We didn't need all those references. We only needed ourselves. Man,
mm-hmm.
Man in the image of God. Jesus Christ.
Interesting. So this is religious ideas to a certain extent. It's functional ideas. It comes to us for a reason, for a purpose. But this, if we can call it a religion, had an anchoring point in the natural world, in the land itself.
Yeah.
How so? tell us a little bit about when Christianity kind of comes onto the scene here then, and you argued in your book that you have, there's something happening then as well, that many of these kinds of hints, symbols, knowledge has been either destroyed or hidden or incorporated further into the religion, right?
Right, yeah. What was that a question?
Well, in a way, if you can maybe talk a little bit about that or how that looks, if there's any examples maybe of some of the rites that we can see in Christianity that echoes of this. I mean, you mentioned that Jesus then is this is the man as God in a way, right? So
yeah. The Christianity is a very, very strange version of this. This knowledge and this or science or what you want to call it. Because on my webpage is a PDF paper about how the cosmic image was placed in the Holy Land. And it was a huge revolution, I suppose, in the evolution of man, that to have man believe only in one God, and his representative as Jesus, who was born. He was always called the New Light, he was the New Light. So he should maybe have been born at what I call Bergþórshvoll in Iceland, where the sun gets born on a new year.
Mm-hmm.
So if a God or Son of God who is a new light, he should have been born there. But he is not. He was born at Helgafell in the Holy Land. Helgafell, of which I said before, man went into to die. But there was where Son of God was born. That's where the Church of Nativity is, in the Holy Land. And that's a very, very strange idea. But probably it's understandable as the whole concept of Jesus as a Son of God who comes to salvage all this the system, if you will. And it all gets immersed in him as a person. He sort of relieves mankind from the burden of knowing all this system. They only had to look at him and believe in him. So that was maybe in perfect time with the revolution,
mm-hmm,
that this was as a new religion.
So was it Christian colonizers primarily that used this system of measure and implementing this image of creation onto the land, or was it
tell us
about who
only pagan. This is the pagan habit. This is what happened, this had, 20, 30, 40,000 years to evolvement, this system.
Wow, okay.
Mm. It's probably what a man did when he became himself, if you get my drift.
In the current form as we know mankind today, this is what he did in the early days, basically.
Yeah. When man stopped roaming the prairies or the heaths, and he started agriculture, he started animal husbandry,
mm-hmm,
and stuff like that. He settled down. Then he had to find these pastures. He had to find this prime land. Slowly but surely, he did, and he had to get to know this land. And he had changed from being a sort of a nomad or a roaming animal, if you will.
Yeah.
And he had started to plan ahead. This is when, as I say, when agriculture started, when you plant the seed for food later. So,
So, sorry to interrupt, but so then within this system, within the things he has, or them, including she, has in their landscape surrounding, there are clues about when you should plant the seeds, when you should, you know, reap what you've sown, pretty much.
This is what man must learn to recognize, you know, the path of the sun. He simultaneously the prime points of the compass become important. Stuff like that, reading the landscape in that way from a certain specific point, not from roaming around.
Mm.
So this is probably as old as when man became this man. We know.
Yeah, there's one component that I want to also talk and make sure we mention here. The image, as you said, which is circular. You have two lines going through it, the cross meeting in the middle.
Yeah.
And then from that middle center point, you have another cube, and you can draw a circle within that, and then you have objects, monuments, or natural things in the landscape, creating three more dots, if you will, in that center square.
Yes.
But outside of the circle, to the southwest, there is also another aspect, the three stones, the three rocks. Yeah, well, what is that?
When you want to measure, let's say you're standing at Berkowskvöll, and you want to that's the mount where the sun will sink behind during the darkest day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You want to measure a line from there. You want to measure a straight line across the virgin land northeast to Stöng. But when you start, you can't go a straight line without foresight.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to build yourself a foresight, like when you point a rifle or a bow, or you have a foresight and a point to make a straight line to where you will shoot or where you're looking.
Yeah.
Fridtjof seems to be outside the system in the southwest, in undisclosed distance, but it served to be a foresight for this straight line to sink. Do you read me?
Yep, absolutely. And I'm also, as you're talking about this, looking at some of the other examples. Obviously, you've found this in the landscape of many other. Cities and countries around the world. Tell us just a little bit about France.
Yeah. France is next in line in my book because probably during the French Revolution, this knowledge seems to have disappeared. I believe the royal line in Paris knew about these things. I think so, but I don't have any sightings.
Well, you have kind of one little bit of a reference point for that, and isn't that the dairy? If we look at it from the point of view of the French, with the king Louis the 16th, was it, and his wife as well.
Yeah.
So what's suggested with that is that they had, at least when they built some of their stuff, or if it was their advisors or whatever, we don't know that, but they had, when they constructed certain things, they did that in the image of the image of creation that we've been talking about here, basically.
It seems to be. It seems so, yeah. It certainly seems so, because all the proportions come together, you know. Rambouillet is the triple rock, three trunker. We were talking about,
mm-hmm.
you know, the foresight. Rambouillet is actually a triangle. It's a castle built initially as a triangle. And I believe that underneath the soil, under it, is the ancient triangular foresight of the cosmic image around Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And you might say that the the foresight is really the basic instructor, if you will, mm-hmm. of the system. Because the line from there, through Port Royal, Saint-Denis, to Ermenonville, is the stung, which I call in Iceland.
Stung, is that a, can you translate that to anything, by the way?
Stung is a herm, or a rot.
Okay.
Ermenonville is probably based on herm, which is the Greek rot, or stink. Ermenonville, the castle, is a symbol for summer and the sun, and that's exactly its main symbol in a system like this. So that fits quite nicely.
Now, you also talked a little bit about the you know, Celtic Christianity in the book, the fact that the French relationship to Celtic Christianity, that although when the primary country was you know, Catholic to begin with, there was potentially that Louis the 14th, as I should have said earlier, and Marie Antoinette were practicing Celtic Christianity. What is that compared to regular Christianity at the time?
It was more numerical and had more sympathy towards the old pagan ideas.
More Gnostic, maybe you wrote in your book as well.
Yeah, Gnostic, right, yeah.
So something happened there. Obviously, we had a schism between the popes in Rome and the French kings, and everything is kind of unfolding from that point up to the Renaissance. But during this, or up to the Revolution, but during this point here, somewhere in this, this knowledge was lost. Was that in all of Europe at that point, all over, or was it just in France?
The creation of the Renaissance is a craving for this system, or this old kind of understanding of the world, the universe, or I think.
Mm-hmm.
And after the year 1000, Italy, France, and the area of Western Europe craved some kind of a Jesus would, you know, emerge again and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But because the Renaissance is like a calling for those old esoteric knowledge. Many symbols of you know, and the art of the Renaissance is very prominent to that, you know.
Mm-hmm. The triple rock at Rambouillet, in close to Paris, is also, you know, today and have been in the past used for different things, meaning that the site, the place, is still important to a certain degree.
Oh yeah.
Is this then just accidental because of the fact that the area and the whole thing was built on this system, or again, do you think that someone actually knows what they're doing and hence then place certain important things at the Rambouillet?
I don't know, but it seems so sometimes. The French are seem to hold in great respect, you know, customs and protocols that are very, very old. And sometimes I wonder, you know, but we may explain it by myths from Rambouillet as a foresight, was the creation of the sun, really, in this ancient pagan belief, I propose. That is, Einar Pálsson has suggested that because if you stand at the center, this is where you start counting a new sun, a new year. You start counting days from this spot, and you build a mount, which is Port Royal in France. But Rambouillet is the director, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You see. So there's a huge amount of knowledge tied to this spot, this area, Port Royal area. Port Royal was very famous for new way of thinking, for the French sort of revision of, mm-hmm. of religion.
Right.
And I believe from there is the sun, the solar cycle counted around Paris.
What is the King's Gate in this equation here?
That's Port Royal. That would be the gate of the sun. If the sun is the king, like we know from the French history,
yeah.
Port Royal is the gate of the king.
It's interesting as well, then, because both Louis the 14th and around that era, they weren't they known as the sun kings,
right.
as well, right? They had this solar motif going all the time.
Yeah.
Huh.
There are various things that suggest that they all knew this kind of system, and they made the protocols around this system.
It's very interesting. I think we should take a little break here and take a pause between the segments and see where we're going to head next here, because there's much more to talk about of the knowledge that you have brought forth in your book, and we should mention the titles and your website and stuff like that as well. Now, you said I have the hardback here, The Measure of the Cosmos, but you said there's another version that it's newer with more graphics in it. Is that with the same still title, or is that title something different?
No, that's the same title, but it's a smaller book. The maps are great. The maps are great on my website also.
They are, yes.
Indeed. Yeah.
We're going to definitely link those up so people, as I said before here, as we talk about this, people can follow along and look at the maps. And you mentioned the PDFs before as well. There's a whole section with that on your website.
Yeah.
So let's mention that, peterhaldorsson.com. Do you want to spell that for us?
P-E-T-U-R, E with a dot or comma over it, Peter. HALLDORSSON.
We'll take a short break here. We'll carry on with more in a little bit, so stay with us. In the second hour with Peter Halldorsson, we begin discussing the devil's bed and bolster in England, Burroughs Mumps, and how it aligns with Stonehenge and Avebury. We move on to looking closer at the same image of creation in Denmark, France, and Italy. We touch upon Christianity's destruction of this knowledge as it spread further north in Europe, yet they placed their cloisters, monasteries, and churches on the exact same spots as the ancient monuments and landmarks tied to this original image of creation. We also discuss the Cube of Rome, a part of the ancient measuring system used natural reference points, such as 72, this being the normal number of heartbeats per minute. Everything was based on natural ratios, and especially ratios tied to the human body. Today we still use feet, of course, but back then also hands and thumbs was used to measure. Much more of this can be heard in the second hour with Peter Halldorsson, available in our members area at redicecreations.com. This is commercial-free radio on all kinds of intriguing and interesting subjects, with archives going back to 2006. Go to our website and read how to subscribe and become a member. It's very simple and easy. Next on Red Ice Radio, Less Visible, Helen Caldicott, Janice Barcelo, Freeman Drunvalo Melchizedek, and many, many more. Full list of upcoming guests, simply click into our radio archive to read more. Stay with us now for more with Peter Halldorsson in Hour 2.